I just want it to be real. Hopefully the common man will be able to relate to it. A lot of highs and a lot of lows. That's all part of the experience, right? And that's what makes the succeeding part of it so sweet, because there's a lot of growth and learning that comes with that.
Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast, the show that brings you conversations, stories, and traditions from all across the uplands. The Birdshot Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt and supported by folks just like you via our Patreon community. If you want to stay up to date and not miss any of our upcoming episodes, be sure to subscribe and follow the show in your podcast player or on YouTube, wherever you're listening or watching today. Tap that button for me. Thank you for doing so. And with that said, let's get into today's conversation on the Birdshot Podcast. We're back at it on the Birdshot Podcast, joined once again by one of our favorite authors and book nerds, I guess we could say, on the Birdshot Podcast, Andy Wayman. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, great. And I accept that title with love, so thank you. I am a book nerd. I really enjoy the upland, you know, literature that I've read and I wanted to contribute to, so.
Yeah, I had a feeling you would accept that. And I use that term endearingly here on the Birdshot Podcast, because as we were just talking, anytime we chat books on this show over the years, it's always well received. And, it's one of the great sidecars, I guess, if you will, to the upland lifestyle, the things that we turn the pages to get us through the off season and enjoy this passion and this hobby year round, which I know is something that, is very important to you and something you appreciate. Been reading it in your latest book, Idaho Grouse Fever, and also listening to it in the first episode of the new podcast that you're a part of, Breaking Cover. To start, why don't you just tell us a little bit about that? Because listeners probably have heard you before. If they've been longtime listeners of the show, they might have some idea who you are, but you kind of have two new projects that we're going to talk a little bit about today. So tell us about the new podcast.
All right. Well, I'll tell you that... you know, it's something that I've thought about for quite a long time. There's not any podcasts that really focus on, you know, the upland hunting literature and tradition that we have out there. It's just a wonderful treasure, you know, that we have out there that a lot of the new up-and-comers just don't know about. So it's something that I've thought about, but I don't know if you know Matt Milbauer. He's my co-host on that, and he is one of the co-hosts on another podcast, which is the Go Flush Yourself. And he had me on a couple months ago. You know, we talked about just my writing and you know, upland writing, and he's the one that kind of approached me to say, hey, would you be willing to be a co-host on this? And I was like, heck yeah. Yeah, I'll do that anytime. So I thought it was a great idea. And so he was kind of the catalyst, I guess you could say, to get things rolling. We just had our first episode. I think it came out last month. And we talk about two of the greatest books written on pheasant hunting. And Pheasants of the Mind by Datus Proffer and Pheasant Hunter's Harvest by Steve Groom. So It was a fun episode. We're going to do it monthly. So we'll have monthly episodes. This month, just to kind of give people a teaser, we're going to be talking with Brett Wanacott about his book, A Millionaire's Dream, which I think you've had him on.
I had him on, and yeah, I read that book, loved it. You must have recommended it to me. And I mean, it comes up frequently enough, but I think it maybe was you that kind of gave me the nudge. And then I read it and I interviewed Brett, and yeah, that'll be a fun one.
Yeah. So he's got a new book coming out pretty soon too. So hopefully he'll talk to us.
I was aware of that. I hadn't talked to Brett in quite a while and was kind of curious of the status. So yeah, that's exciting too.
Yeah. So that'll come out this, the month of August. And then, I think we've got in the pike, we've got, Reb McNally, Chuckers Will Shoot Back. And,
yep, I have that book.
Pheasants in the Panic Room.
Okay.
So we'll talk to him in September, and then October, we're doing something fun. We're going to talk about some of the ghost stories and, you know, Halloween related stories that you find in Upland literature. So that should be a fun one too. So just to kind of get,
you guys are having, you're having fun with it already. That's really cool.
Yeah. Should be good. So
yeah.
Excited.
Awesome. Well, I did listen to the first episode yesterday, kind of in preparation for you and I connecting, and, enjoyed it. Both of the books I am familiar with. They're obviously, well, one of them comes up all the time, as you know, the Dadis proper book. The other one, maybe not so much, but it was so funny because I was listening to it, and I have not read Pheasants of the Mind yet, but Matt was talking about how much he loved that book and kind of why, and he shared some of his background. You mentioned him. I don't know if Matt and I have crossed paths. We maybe have chatted a little bit. I'm not sure, but I kind of got my tire spinning about talking to him about pheasant hunting, because he was talking about how that's his passion, and it was just interesting. But anyways, he talked about that book, and then you started talking about the Steve Grooms book, and he has, it's Modern Pheasant Hunting is kind of his main how to where to book, as you described it, right?
Wrote back but in then, the early 80s, yeah.
Yeah. What's the other one is the one that you Pheasant talked about.
Hunter's was, Harvest.
Okay. Pheasant Hunter's Harvest.
Lions and Buford. And it's more the lyrical writing. It's more stories and just great, great writing. I really love it. I think it's like Drummer in the Woods. What Drummer in the Woods is to grouse hunting, that book is to pheasant hunting.
There were a couple of quotes and passages. I won't spoil them here. We'll encourage people to go listen to Breaking Cover. And I was kind of thinking to myself, it's funny how I was really enjoying just listening to two other bird hunters talking about bird hunting books and like getting me excited to go read those books. But it just was that good. And like, obviously it was clear how much you enjoyed Pheasant Hunter's Harvest, but the sort of the first, I think it was the first line in the book. And then there was a quote about the Trinity, the land, the bird. And yeah. Again, that was just, I was just eating that up. So anyways, I got so excited that I went on to Amazon to go buy the book. Cause like, as I often do when Andy's talking, I'm like, okay, gotta get this one. And I looked, and there was a new copy for like $212. I obviously, I'm guessing it's out of print, but so then I kind of like was like, oh, bummer. But then thankfully Amazon recognizes your purchase history, and it was like I had already purchased the books a year or two ago. So I went and checked my shelf, and sure enough, I've got it. So I already took your recommendation sometime in the past on that one, Andy.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, you won't regret that one. That's a fun book. And you know, I'm not the biggest pheasant hunter. I do enjoy hunting them, but I can appreciate a good book on it too, you know. It's just great. I think it's one of the best written upland hunting books, period.
Yeah. Well, I do have I don't pheasant hunt a ton, as the listeners will know, but I do have a trip on the books already in November. So that was kind of feeding it's August right now, we're chatting, and I think everybody's kind of turned the corner a little bit in their, certainly in their minds, if they're not doing bird dog stuff and training and all that kind of stuff, but definitely thinking about fall. So I was getting pretty fired up, and I thought, what better way to build up the anticipation to the hunt than read a couple of pheasant hunting books. So I'm going to crack those open.
Oh, you'll love it. It'll get you fired up for sure.
Well, where are you at? Are you focusing on fishing? Are you tuning up the bird dogs? Are you hitting the skeet course? Like, where's Andy at? We're talking August 7th today. This episode will go out a little bit later around the release of your book, but where's your head at, Andy?
I'm still fishing, but it's hotter than Hades right now. I did. I went backpacking into the Copper Basin, which is a high mountain area with lakes, and took Rainy with me last weekend, and she found two blue grouse for me while we were up fishing. So a lot of fun. Yeah. So, but that was a hard hike. I'm pretty sore. I'm still sore from it. That was the we did the hike Friday and Saturday. So I'm getting there. I'm just kind of building up to getting hunting. It's too dang hot really to get out yet. But our hunt starts on August the 30th. So we're
Oh,
coming up.
is that every year date on the calendar? Okay.
Yep. August the 30th is when Forest Grouse opens, and I think it's I'll say it's on a Sunday this year, so I probably won't make it out for the opener, but maybe have to skip out of work early on the 31st.
Yeah, that sounds right, 'cause I think my boys are it's a little weird one this year 'cause Labor Day is like as late as it can be. I think it's on like the 7th. And so like my boys are going back to school kind of a week early, on the 31st, I think. So I was going over my calendar the other day, just kind of looking ahead. But yeah, things are shifting around. I got my first trip planned probably mid-September. So we got a ways to go. Still enjoying some of the summer activities. We got cabin stuff, and I will probably obviously I have the new pup this year. So she's been a lot of fun, and we got a little bit of work to do before hunting season arrives, so that's the number one priority for me.
Very cool. So another setter, I assume.
Another setter, yep. She's from the same kennel, Northwoods Bird Dogs, in Minnesota, and pretty similar lines to my other two dogs. Very much Rose, and a little bit different dog. You know, this is the third dog for me, and we've been having a blast. We got her right at the end of May, so we've had her for just about 2 months now, and she's fitting right in with Hartley and Rose and adjusting well to the routine. She's really, really like routine oriented. It's just like every day she kind of does the same things, and maybe that's just a reflection of me and how I do things around here, but it's almost like uncanny at times, like how predictable she can be. But then she's a little bit of a wild card too. Like she can be kind of bossy at times, and she's a little bit different. A little different. I'm looking over at her on the couch. I never do this, but I have my office door open, and I'm just kind of letting her and Rose like to run around the yard and wrestle and do all kinds of stuff. And we're recording relatively early today, so I didn't want her cooped up in here, but she's been a lot of fun, and I cannot wait to get a new pup in the woods this fall. How old is
Yeah, Rainey's getting old, man. She turned 9 in April. So she did great on our hike, but man, when she got home on Sunday, she basically was out. So it's amazing how much they can give and give and give, and then it catches up with them. So I think she'll do good this year though. I'm excited for her. She's slowed down a little bit. But hopefully on a day hunt, she'll be fine.
Yeah, well, I ask because I'm halfway through Andy's latest book, which will be available by the time listeners are hearing this, Idaho Grouse Fever, Upland book number three, right?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, Upland book number three. You got a fly fishing book as well. But I'm halfway through. Normally, I'd like to finish them, but you had some travel, and we kind of squeezed this one a little bit early because I wanted to time the episode to get out for the release date. But anyways, you talk a lot about Misty and Rainy in that book. So a lot of the essays that I've read through the point where I'm at are kind of like back in 2017, 2018, 2019, some of those early stories. And so just as I've been reading, I've kind of been thinking like, oh, I wonder how Rainy's doing now. Like kind of it's fun to read about some of the first experiences that you've had with her and some of the first hunts. And I guess reflecting back, she's 9 years old. What do you think of most when you think of Rainy, like as a bird dog, and some of the stories and memories you have?
Oh, she's just been a joy. I mean, that's the thing that I would say. She's had it from the get-go. I mean, her very first year, I think she pointed almost all of the Idaho grouse species, and we had a lot of success before she was even 1 year old. So,
Yeah.
She's been great. She's very smart. She's also very hard headed. And I don't know if you've got to the chapters where there's one in particular called Rainy Giveth and She Taketh Away.
Oh yes, I did read.
Yeah, that actually was published for the first time in Project Upland magazine. But yeah, so she's super smart, but she would retrieve, but not to me. So one of the things that I did is I ended up paying a trainer down in Pocatello to teach her to force fetch, and it was like she became the total package after. So that was when she was five that I had her force fetched, and she's been she's been the best grouse dog I've ever had. And I mean to take nothing away from Misty. I love Misty. She was so fun and so good, but this dog has just done everything and more than I could ever hope for.
Okay. See, that's interesting because and again, maybe it's the perspective of the story that I was reading or like the timing of it. 'Cause you talked about Misty being like, I don't know if you said once in a lifetime dog, but, you just, obviously you have an appreciation for your bird dogs. And you talked about that. And maybe, Rainey was young at the time, but that's, so she's developed into a really good grouse dog.
You bet. Yeah, she's a great companion and also just a wonderful grouse dog. One of the best I've ever seen. So, not to brag on her, but I took Rob Hubble, from Northwest Wing Shooters YouTube channel, and he's like, "Man, Rainey's a grouse pro." That was his term for her. So I've always kind of carried that. She is. She definitely knows her business. So,
Yeah, she's a French Brittany, right?
yes. Yep.
And Misty was as well.
No, Misty's American. She was
Oh, she was. Okay.
from a kennel out of Pocatello, and just a great dog. I mean, very, very similar hunting styles. I'd say Misty was a little more athletic and a little longer legged, but I'd say pretty comparable in their, in their abilities, I would say. But Rainey's just had, a heck of a lot more contact. And Misty only lived to be seven, so Rainey's nine.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And I did read that Rainey is from Grayson Geyer's kennel. Is that correct?
No. So Grayson is a friend on Facebook. And after I lost Misty, I was thinking about new dogs, and Grayson had posted something about this beautiful French Brittany. It was a tricolor, and I sent him a message on Instagram, and I said, "Grayson, where'd you get that dog?" And he said, "Andy, if you're interested in the best French Brittany you can find, look up Lyra, excuse me, Linda Kira's from Topperlin Kennels up in Stevensville, Montana." And then he told me this story, and I've shared this before, but the story was, no, he might have shared a video, but anyway, he had a quarter, and he flips this quarter for his dog Ella and tells her to fetch, and she goes, digs out this quarter and brings it back to him out of this tall grass. Yeah. And then he told me, he said, "Ella is the best French Brittany I've ever had." So, and there's in my first book, Jay Dowd had done a painting of Ella, and and Grayson allowed me to put that into the book. So, but if I turned my camera that way, that's the picture that Jay did for Idaho rough grouse hunting. I don't know if you remember that,
Oh,
but
yeah. Well, I
it was
guess.
kind of similar to that. Ella's picture was similar to that one.
It's upland hunting world is a small world, but it's just funny to like. But I probably read that. I didn't know who who Grayson was, but then I've since had a chance to meet him. And obviously you guys are on, you know, opposite ends of the country, but yeah, that was cool to see that. And it was a recommendation on where to go to get Rainey.
Yeah. And it was a, you know, it was providential, I'd say, you know, just, she's just the perfect dog for what I love and what I wanted. So I'm appreciative of him all the time for that.
So do you have a new pup in the mix?
No, I've got Aki. I don't know if I've talked to you about her, but she's my golden retriever.
Okay, yeah, I thought you did have a golden, but we haven't talked about her much at all.
She's five, and there's a chapter in the new book that I wrote called The Golden Grouse Getter Society.
Okay.
And it's about her, you know, and kind of a fun story, but, you know, for her, we know her mom. Her mom is Amber, and some of our best friends have, you know, her mom, and we got the dog sit for her, and I just fell in love with that dog. I'm like, this is a smart, companionable dog. I bet you I could teach her to grouse, and it was what I said. So when they told us that they were going to breed her, you know, my daughter's like, well, I want one of the pups. And I'm like, well, I'll support that, because I wanted to see if I could teach this dog to hunt. And anyway, that chapter is about her becoming, you know, it's kind of about the gamble of getting a golden that didn't come from hunting stock, and taking her into the grouse woods and teaching her. And, you know, there's some really fun light bulb moments that I watched this dog have. And she's a great dog. One of my funnest days last year in the grouse woods was with her, you know. So just, you know, she's a flusher. She doesn't point, but she's one of the best retrievers I've ever hunted with. So, yeah, she's great. I prefer her to retrieve over Rainey, because Rainey's a little hard mouth. Yeah, Aki doesn't ruffle.
Hopefully Rainey's not listening.
Yeah, she'll get over it. Yeah, I'm actually... Yeah.
I could imagine that, the golden retriever, just the perfect bird.
So good. Like, doesn't even ruffle a feather, you know, and she loves it. She just gets after it. So just been a wonderful, fun dog to hunt with. I mean, I still prefer pointing dogs over the retrieving breeds, but I can appreciate her for what she brings to the table too. And like I said, one of my best days last year was with her, you know, as we got into a pile of birds and shot a limit with her. It was fun.
When you got her started hunting, like, did you do anything really differently, or did you just kind of take her out and cross your fingers?
You know, I would tell you I'm not the best of dog trainers. I mean, my philosophy is get them into birds and let them do what they do naturally. And, you know, I'd say Aki's pretty competitive. So I've hunted her a lot with Rainey. And she kind of just figured out that if the Rainey's bell goes silent, find Rainey and she'll find the bird. So sometimes it becomes a foot race between me and her to get to the grouse first. But you know, she's kind of, in the last year or two, she's a little more independent and not so reliant upon Rainey and finding the bird. So she's finding them and flushing them for me in range.
Yeah. How does she, like, if you were just hunting her by herself, how does she range? Is she covering a lot of ground, or kind of like sticking pretty close to you? How does that?
You know, I'd say she's probably within 30 yards, yeah, for the most part. So not
where you want her, but she's hunting and searching and doing all that thing.
Oh yeah. She's definitely doing well, doing better, I'd say, at that, yeah, than she did. Before, she would try to keep up with Rainey, and Rainey, I'd say, is more like 50 to 70 yards a lot of the time. So, you know, I there have been times when she's flushed the bird before I could even get into, you know, get close. So not so much, not too bad. I'd say about 75% of the time we're working well together. So, and I'll hunt them together still, but I'm starting to hunt her a little bit more on her own too.
Yeah. I will be thinking about that a lot this fall, and I'll be generally, the way you describe yourself as a bird dog trainer is kind of how I would describe myself. I pretty much take my dogs hunting and try to coax a little bit out of them that I can, that I'm able to. But the birds do most of the work in the
yeah.
inherent natural ability, obviously. But I will be trying to hunt Hazel a lot by herself. We're doing lots of runs, puppy runs right now, and she's doing great with that. She's still in that, you know, she sticks pretty close to me, but it's funny. It's like almost like every day I can see her, she's getting more and more confident. And this is a benefit because we're in the woods and she's wanting to follow Rose, and she's like pretty much only interested in following Rose to see what she's doing. But in doing so, she's running through brush and going through heavier cover and just doing quick little loops out off the trail and then back. So that's all kind of like those little foundation pieces, just kind of building her confidence and her abilities running around the woods. And we have not, you know, now it's being August, we can kind of start looking for birds. I haven't gone specifically looking for birds yet, but that we should do that really soon, just because there would be some places I could go to possibly get into some grouse and hopefully get that first exposure. But I'll be doing a little bit of pigeon work, just to some formal stuff this summer as well. But it's fun to think about a new pup kind of developing and get started in the grouse woods. But I don't typically hunt my dogs together a whole lot, but I'll try to mix in a little bit of it, I think, this fall, just because what I saw with Rose is, now you don't have two, you have a pointy dog and a flushing dog. So like you said, you got to race Aki to the bird, but I want to develop that backing. I think I've already seen a little bit from Hazel to show that she would be a pretty natural backer given the opportunity.
I wouldn't be afraid to hunt them together, Nick. I mean, you know, maybe not all the time, but I can tell you that Rainey taught Aki about grouse. I mean, her excitement, her abilities, her, you know, the instincts, you know, kind of rubbed off on Aki. So even though she's not a pointer per se, you know, you can kind of see that she's figured out grouse because of what she's seen from Rainey. So I, you know, even though it's sometimes works against me, I, you know, the fact that I hunted them together, I think was beneficial for a dog that didn't come from hunting stock. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think I'm kind of curious about that. Cause I didn't hunt Rose and Hartley together a lot just based on dog power. It's just like, I've got one dog to go this way and one dog to go. It's not to say that they never hunted together, but they run together all the time. You know, anytime we're exercising, they're always running together. So we get a good bit of that in, just not carrying a shotgun, that sort of thing. But I will probably do a little bit of each, because I mean, Rose could absolutely show Hazel a lot about grouse, because she's been into a lot of grouse over her years.
Sounds like.
I'll just be keeping an eye on, you know, just wanting Hazel to have her independence and confidence. But I'm not really concerned about that. I think there's a balance you can strike.
Sure. I'm excited for you. You're going to have a fun season.
Yeah, definitely will. And she'll be the oldest pup that I've had, so she'll be kind of more physically capable than, she's about a month and a half older than Rose was. And Rose was very much a young pup at the start of the season. Hazel will be too, but I just remember how much she changed, you know, by the time it's November, December, and Rose is 5-6 months old. Hazel will be a couple months, like they develop quite a bit. Fit both physically and mentally and over that first year. So it's going to be a really, really fun fall. That's for sure.
That's perfect. I was going to say, I picked up Rainey in June and she was already finding and pointing birds by October. So you're kind of in the same boat with Hazel. Hopefully you'll see some good bird work from her this year.
Yep. We're going to try. That's for sure. I have no doubt it'll be fun. Yeah.
I'll be excited to follow your adventures.
Definitely. So let's just sort of jog back to Idaho grouse fever a little bit. I guess I should ask, what's the tipping point for Andy to say, darn it, it's time for another grouse book? Like, you just had, you piled up enough stories to put another edition out, but what was the inspiration or the spark for Idaho grouse fever?
That's fun. So, I mean, it's kind of like any of the other books. I mean, with this book, I wanted to do what I did with Idaho rough grouse hunting, which is, you know, that which is focused primarily on rough grouse. So with this one though, I wanted to focus on all of, I mean, the little quip that I have in there is that I've never met a grouse I didn't like. And so Idaho actually has 5 different species of grouse, and I've hunted them all successfully and love them all. And so this book is basically like Idaho rough grouse hunting, but covering all 5 species. And it also has essays on some of the upland literature and just some of those topics that are grouse related. You know, grouse fever, the name is kind of how I would describe a grouse hunter's buck fever, you know, where I kind of describe myself as JoJo the idiot circus boy with the shotgun in the woods when I was younger, because I'd be so excited that I couldn't get my brain and my, you know, body to work together. But, you know, after a while, just kind of you get through, you work through that, and you start to connect on some of the birds. But even though I'm 53 now, I still have that excitement for grouse and grouse hunting, you know. And so the subtitle is, it's Idaho Grouse Fever, an obsession for all things grouse. And that's really how I describe the book. It's for anybody who loves hunting grouse and reading about grouse and, you know, basically thinks about grouse hunting 8 days a week, you know. So that's what it's about. And there is, you know, there's a lot of fun chapters. I in my first book, Idaho Rough Grouse Hunting, I had a chapter about, I think it was called Discovering Tinkham Town. And this one, which is about Corey Ford's The Road to Tinkham Town. And this one, I hope I didn't get them mixed up, but this one has kind of a follow-up to that, which is The Search for Tinkham Town. You know, it's a little more, you know, I guess history, a little plot twist to that first one that I wrote. And in the last book I wrote, I don't know if you remember this, but I wrote a chapter that Rip Van Winkle was a grouse hunter. That was one of the last
chapters. Yeah, I vaguely do remember that.
Yeah. So I've always kind of been a fan of Washington Irving and his writings. And so I wrote that one back originally, and after I published that book, I thought, you know what, it'd be fun to do a grouse hunting story that's set in Sleepy Hollow. And so you haven't got there yet, but the last chapter is a fictional piece that I wrote, which I haven't done a lot of fiction, but it's Rough Shooting in Sleepy Hollow, a new spin on a classic tale. So
damn, yeah, you got me excited now.
Yeah, so I'm kind of excited about that one too, because it was super fun to research and you know, write. And Jay Dowd did some really, really cool artwork for that chapter.
Oh, okay. Too. I could imagine that'd be right up his alley.
Yeah, super cool what he did. So I don't want to spoil that for anybody, but if you know the legend of Sleepy Hollow, you can kind of imagine, I guess, is what I'd tell you.
Yeah, well, that's a good... first talk about the art on the cover, and then we mentioned Jay's artwork. It's not only Andy's writing, but there's lots of fun sketches, a lot of Jay Dowd artwork throughout the pages. But it's got a great cover too.
Yeah, you bet. You know, a friend of mine is actually from Idaho now, Ross Young, and I'm sure the readers have seen his, they might not have heard of him, but they've seen his work.
You've seen it, yeah.
So Ross has been one of my favorite artists for a long, long time, and I've hunted with Ross. I've actually taken him hunting we took him to the Royal McNab, probably back in 2018 or 19, and just had a fun hunt with him. So He's a great guy and just a good friend. He actually provided the artwork for my last book, which was Idaho Upland Days.
Okay. Yeah, they have kind of a consistent look to them. Yeah.
So that was one of the first... No, he had actually provided some paintings. He has the back cover for Idaho Rough Grouse Hunting too. So even though he wasn't the front cover, he had the back cover. And then if you look in the color insert, there's quite a few of his paintings that are displayed in my first book. Well, this one, he provided the cover painting, which is, you know, I can show it to you, but it's this hunter with a English setter and sharp-tail grouse. And
definitely caught my eyes.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. I got to tell you what the name of the painting is real quick. It is Sharpshooters is what it's perfect. Called. And the back, he also did the back cover, if you look at that. And that the back cover is Sunset Sharptail. So
let's see the back. I was rushing out to my office today and I forgot my copy. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. You can kind of see and he usually paints with setters. So we won't hold that against him.
Yeah.
But
my kind of guy.
Yeah. But anyway, so we had quite a few different paintings to choose from, but these are the ones that we settled on. There is in the color insert, he provided a couple of other really, really beautiful paintings that you'll see in there. But so that was fun to
take. Right about where I'm at in the book. I just kind of flipped through all those photos yesterday morning.
Oh, did you? Yeah. So it turned out great. It just makes the book so much, so beautiful. So really appreciate teaming up with Ross. And just to tell you a little bit more about Ross, I think there's a national championship, you know, for pointing dogs. And every year he's the one that paints the painting of the winner.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So his painting style is like you said, if you didn't know who it was, you've seen it. It's just so, it's almost instantly recognizable. So I'm sure I've seen it all over the place.
Yeah. I think his artwork even appears on a beer can somewhere, you know, I mean, yeah. People know his work, so hopefully you'll recognize it when you see it. But just he's a wonderful artist. Lives in Preston, Idaho, so not about 100 miles from where I live, so not too far. But and then the inside artwork, you know, I teamed up with Jay Dowd. Jay had done, and I think we had agreed that he was going to do 20, but we ended up using some of his art that he had done for some of my articles. And then he did the little drawing that's the main picture for Rough Shooting in Sleepy Hollow.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I have not seen that yet.
Yeah. You'll see it. You can't miss it. I like I said, I don't want to blow it for you because it's just part of the story, but hopefully the readers enjoy that chapter. That was one of the funnest ones that I wrote.
Well, yeah, I remember when I read Idaho Rough Grouse Hunting, the Tinkumtown story really captured me. Cause I think I read that story in high school, the Corey Ford Road to Tinkumtown. And I mean, I was into grouse hunting at the time, and that just, I mean, it blew me away would be the way to put it, which I think a lot of people have had a similar effect reading that. It's just a wonderful, wonderful story. You can Google it, find it. Definitely go read it if you haven't. And when I read Idaho Rough Grouse, I don't think I knew you or I'd connected you at the time, but I think it just kind of really piqued my interest and we chatted. So, and I have not got to the new piece in the new book. So yeah, you got me really fired up to finish the book.
I'd like to say the best is yet to come, but
yeah. So. Now you've read all kinds of stuff. Do you remember the first time you came across Road to Tinkumtown? Or, I mean, you probably described it in Idaho Rough Grouse Hunting, but it's been a while since I read
it. I mean, I guess the biggest inspiration that I've had in upland literature is my brother Sean. And he would send me books and make recommendations. And I don't remember exactly when he first told me about Corey Ford. But, you know, I just remember him telling me, hey, this is the greatest grouse hunting story ever written. And I said, well, that's a tall order to fill. Yeah. He sent me, a book that was republished. And Lori Morrow was the editor of it. I want to say it's like Warm Noses, or something like that. Cold Noses, Warm Heart. And it's just dog stories that Corey Ford wrote. And in that book, she published for the first time the unedited version of The Road to Tinkhamtown. And so when you go online and you look up that story from Field and Stream, you're going to find the edited version. But the unedited version has a lot of details that are not in there, the first published. And so it was based upon that I kind of, and another book that I'd read by one of Corey's best friends, Dan Holland, the Upland Game Hunter's Bible, where Dan mentions that he hunted Tinkhamtown. He's got a cool little story in there. And so anyway, based upon those two stories, the unedited version and Dan's story in the Upland Game Hunter's Bible, I kind of came up with a theory that Tinkhamtown's a real place, that Dan had hunted it, he had found it. Here's where he said it was. Here's where Corey said, so basically what I was trying to show is that, even though the story is a fictional story, it's got elements of truth. Like Corey was basically pulling from his experience to describe this place that he had hunted with his dog. And, and so that was kind of the first, the discovering Tinkhamtown was about that. Well, come to find out that, they had these five friends that hunted grouse every year for like 25 to 30 years. And, another one of their friends wrote about Tinkhamtown and how he tried to find it. He claims he was the one that found the map, but he couldn't get there, because he got stopped by these beaver ponds. And so he never made it to Tinkhamtown. So you have basically three friends that wrote independently about the same place, this glorious grouse covert. And one got, two of them obviously got there. Corey got there, and Dan Holland got there. But their friend, I want to say his name was, they called him Woody. Everest Wood, I think, was his name. They called him Woody. He never made it. And so I kind of come to a different conclusion that, yeah, they all knew about it, but they did not share it with each other. So anyway, it's kind of a fun little twist. I don't want to spoil it for everybody. You'll just have to read it.
Yeah, no, it's like the best of, it's a grouse hunt and then it's a treasure hunt adventure. It's like what more could you ask for?
The holy grail of grouse hunting coverts,
Yeah. So. Now it's been a while since I've read the story. So could you find the unedited version online, do you think, or you're not sure?
No. I think what happened is Dartmouth College owns all of Corey's manuscripts, papers. Because he went to school there, and I want to say he taught there too. But Lori Morrow, who actually bought Corey's, I can't remember the name of his estate, but she bought his house and then became really interested in him. And she went to the school and asked if she could be like his, kind of his, I don't know what you'd call her, but basically the official Corey Ford historian or whatever. And so they gave her permission to publish that in that reprint of his book on dogs. The original book, Cold Noses and Warm Hearts, didn't have that story in it. So, but the newly published edition does, has the unedited version.
Might have one added to the shopping list there. I don't think I have that one.
Well, and I don't know that it's worth buying other than for that. Yeah, she put together another book, The Trickiest Thing in Feathers, which is kind of an anthology of all of Corey's writings on upland game hunting. Really, really good. And I just thought, why in the heck didn't she put that in there? And I think she took Corey's best writing and probably put it in a book that's least interesting, I would say, to upland bird hunters. And it's more probably to give people the incentive to buy that book, you know. Yeah. But I would, you know, Trickiest Thing in Feathers is wonderful. I recommend that to anybody.
Yep. That story is, that's a good one. So I haven't got to that yet. There's really a couple of themes that I've been sort of pulling on as I'm reading through the first half or so of the book. One of which that really stands out to me, just cause I think it's kind of where I am in grouse hunting right now, just like how much you kind of allude to and appreciate just like everything that makes a day grouse hunting special. And maybe even almost cliche to say at this point, like, but it's, you know, not just about pulling the trigger and bagging the bird, but it's the search, the adventure, the exploration, the discovery. It's just like all of the bits and pieces and components that sort of make hunting what it is. And you could probably apply that to other forms of hunting and outdoor pursuits and passions and stuff, but you've got like all the things that we love, you know, the dogs and the bird and the land and the shotguns and the upland craft, as Mark Parman would call it. I've loved that one since he kind of wrote about that. Another Jay Dowd illustrated book, but you're clearly appreciative of all of that, everything that makes a day grouse hunting what it is.
It's certainly tried to capture that, you know, that's more than just the bagged or dead bird in hand. It's everything else, you know. I think I quoted from Steve Grooms in that Breaking Covers podcast that he says, you know, when you're younger and you're going at it, you always think it's about finding birds, but then you realize later on down the road that it's about everything else that goes with that, you know, that's really what you're out there looking for. And I hope that comes through, you know, as people read my work, is that, yeah, I'm writing about hunting. I'm writing about, you know, shooting birds and things like that. But to me, it's about the camaraderie and the companionship with your bird dogs and, you know, the history and the just that shared, you know, experience that you have with your friends and your bird dogs.
Yeah. And you're not shy about leaning into the mishaps and the shooting woes and the struggles, yeah, and the challenges of grouse hunting and dog training.
Yeah, for sure. I just wanted to be real. And hopefully the common man will be able to relate to it, you know. A lot of highs and a lot of lows. That's all part of the experience, right? And that's what makes the succeeding part of it so sweet, you know, because there's a lot of growth and learning that comes with that.
Yeah. If it was easy, quote unquote, it wouldn't all be all that fun. Yeah. There was a lost gun story in there. Any sign of the old red label, or is that thing still leaning up against a tree out in the woods somewhere?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. I have not heard anything about it since. So I'd like to think that it's in somebody's gun cabinet, you know, being,
yeah,
well loved, and, you know, but who knows what happened, yeah, to it.
Yeah. You have shared your love of the Ruger Red Label, in the past. And do you have the 28 gauge?
I do. Yep. I sure, okay, did. Yep.
There was a really nice photo in the book of a ruffed grouse in the 28 and kind of put a smile on my face, because actually first 28 gauge I ever hunted with was it was lent to me by an old hunting mentor of mine. He used to live up the street from me when I was a kid. He actually just recently passed away. I was sorry to hear, but he was elderly and not in the best of health, but I was thinking about that recently, and he loaned me his Ruger Red Label 28 gauge.
Sweet.
Like, you got to try this. And I had not shot a lot of double guns at the time. And I took it out, and I think I got one grouse with it. but sort of had my eyes open to the Ruger Red Label and the 28 gauge.
Very cool.
All in the same. And yeah, I love that gun, and I know you do as well. Is that what's your favorite shotgun right now?
Oh man, that's fun. You know, I have three that I kind of go through the rotations on. Just depends on what I'm running. But I've got the Ruger Red Label 12, but it's heavy, so I use it for like pheasants. I'll use it for sage grouse. I'll sometimes use it if I'm really, really struggling with like shooting slope. I'll use it for grouse too, but I'll use like 2-inch loads, you know, or 2.5-inch loads from RST. But I call that gun the Grouse Slayer because it's choked cylinder and cylinder. So it's wide.
Is it fixed choke?
It is fixed choke. Yeah.
Wow.
That's why I bought that gun, because I'm like, I bet you I could shoot that gun. It shoots well. And then I've got the Ruger Red Label 28, which with the English straight grip.
The straight grip is what really caught my eye in that photo. That's what I wanted to bring that up to you.
It's a beautiful, wonderful, light gun, and it fits, and I can shoot it. It's a little whippier than the 12.
Do those have 26 inch barrels?
No, I think it's a little longer than that.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotta go back and measure them, but I think they're a little bit longer. But it's a great gun. That's my go-to gun. And I actually, I don't know if I told you this, but I broke the stock on that gun.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, had to get that replaced, and had a gunsmith up in Driggs, Idaho that did the work for me and did a great job. So
all new piece of wood, or did he repair the old one?
No, I couldn't even find it. I tripped in the snowy grouse woods, and when I got up, there was a big chunk of wood that was missing. I couldn't even find it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So,
man, that was a bummer.
Yeah, that was a bummer. So that gun was out of commission for a little while, but got to use it all last season and just had a blast with it. And I just got a side-by-side TriStar Bristol, and did okay. I shot my first rough grouse double with it last year. Yeah, but it has a kind of a safety issue where if it's anywhere in the middle, you can't shoot. And so you might have it like switching barrels.
This is like it's a selectable single trigger.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And yeah, that's like the old, I don't know. I have a Browning Satori Upland Special, and there was a thing with those that the safety could get caught in the middle. I never really experienced it much. I haven't shot it in a long time.
So I'll tell you what I did. I had my good friend Cliff, weld the safety. So the safety's now stuck to one side, mm-hmm. and it's just automatically going
to
switch.
Heard of other people doing that to guns that have that issue. Yeah.
Yep. So, and it works pretty good, but I kind of don't have as much confidence in that gun as I do with the Rugers. So
what gauge is that Bristol?
It's a 16. No, what is it? Yeah, it's a 16.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. 16 gauge.
Cool. They make those in 16 gauge.
Yeah. It's a fun gun. And the first time I went out and used it, I shot a double on rough grouse. And I've never.
Tell me about that. Let's not bury the lead here. Any kind of rough grouse double.
Oh, you know, last year was kind of a different year. We just didn't have the bird numbers like we'd had in years past. And we were hunting on opening day and hunted all throughout this covert that I call Grouse Springs. And I don't think we moved a bird in Grouse Springs. So we went down to the what I call the Beaver Meadows that I wrote about, and I've written about it a number of times in my books. But we went to the Beaver Meadows, and it was a hot day. So we're probably looking at it was last part of August, and my hunting companion Scott Johnson and his boys, they were like, "We're done, you know, we're not." They went back to the truck and. We're getting snacks and drinks. And I said, well, I'm just going to take the round around the Beaver Meadows. So I walked down there with Rainey, and Aki, and we go down in there, and Rainey found just there had to be 10 grouse in this cubby, and they just started flushing like crazy. One actually pops up into a tree, and as I walked towards it, it flushed. And I shot. I didn't think I'd hit it, but then another one got up, and I pulled again for the second barrel, and I dropped that one. Well, Rainey goes up and picks up the first one, brings it to me, and then I pick up the other one. I'm like, I just shot a double.
Surprise double.
It's brand new gun. Yes, I was just tickled, man. I just never done that before. You know, I've shot doubles on blue grouse and sharptails, but never on rough grouse. And so,
yeah,
to me, that was just sweet because, you know, you only get so many opportunities to do that.
Yeah. Yep. They're, it's not all that often where you even have a chance to shoot at two rough grouse at the same time. I remember a couple of years ago, 2023, we had a really good year on, a really good year for bird numbers, like the best that a lot of people could remember. And I did not shoot a double that year, but I just remember thinking there were so many. It was like every time you flush one grouse, there was another one. And a lot of times it was, you know, more like a sharptail, like flush one, and then there was another grouse there, which is kind of unusual. Like a lot of times when you flush a rough grouse, it's just one.
Yeah.
But that year in particular, there were the number of multi-bird flushes I had was just incredible. And I did have, there were times where there were multiple birds in the air. Cause I just remember it being a thing that I kept thinking of during that season. Like if I was ever going to shoot a double, this would be the year to do it. But it didn't happen.
Didn't get
I don't
her
know
done.
If I really, yeah, I don't know if I like, I don't even know if I missed like a many opportunities. I'm kind of a, like when I shoot at birds, I'm very kind of, I don't know if I would say I'm picky, but I am selective. Like I choose my shots and I just, when it feels right, I raise my gun and I pull the trigger. But a lot of times it's just like, I shoot once. And sometimes if I miss, I don't even shoot again. I just like, I'm looking for that feel of like the right shot at the right time and I'll take it. And if I get it, great. But I'm not really wired to shoot doubles, if that makes any sense. And when I go out to the prairie, like I'm always like, man, they should be able to get a double on sharptails, but I'm just not thinking about taking that second shot all the time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's also if you do connect on the first one, you want to make sure you see where it drops. So
for sure, yeah.
I mean, I've had other opportunities, really good opportunities, at shooting the double on rough, but you know, I'm like you. You're just not wired in the grouse woods to think, go for the second shot, you know? So,
yeah. I think if anything, it's more like, it's just that habitual, like usually it's just that one bird and I'm not even thinking about a second bird. Yeah.
Totally understand that.
There was, you did mention the Fox Sterlingworth in the book and you tied in what it was cool. Cause, you've obviously read the Michael McIntosh book on Ansley Fox, and pulled in a little bit of the story, what you could there, which was, it brought back memories from when I read that book and I was kind of, I still have my Fox 16, but it's like the furthest thing from fitting me. So I rarely shoot it anymore. But I loved the story in the history on that one as well. There was a lot of shotgun chatter so far in the first half of the book, which I appreciate.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like I said, I was trying to capture a lot of different aspects of grouse hunting. And I don't think you can, I mean, in the first book, if you remember, I wrote about that NID, Ithaca NID 20 gauge that I got, you know, that was touted to be a grouse hunter's dream. And I struggled with that gun. I never learned to shoot that gun. I'll just tell you that it had the double triggers and it just didn't fit me very well, but fun to write about. So this is kind of the companion piece, if you will, to that. I ended up getting that first published with Project Upland, and they actually, if you go into like podcasts, they have a podcast that's on that article. Kind of fun to listen to.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So look that up if anybody wants to hear that article. Turned out pretty fun, but yeah. And it does tie in with grouse hunting, because one of the last stories is about, you know, hunting for blue, you know, getting a blue grouse with that gun. So
that gun, gotcha.
That gun doesn't fit me really well either.
Yeah. Is it kind of the, now yours is, I'm remembering because it's one of the, yours was the first year that they started calling them the Sterlingworth, right? You wrote about that. So it was kind of an early Sterlingworth gun, but is it just like a short stock with a ton of drop?
No, it's basically a spliced, it's an English straight grip, but the gunsmith that built it, they didn't make it in a straight grip.
Oh, so yeah. Smith, I remember
actually
that
altered
now.
It. And when I mount it, you know, it seems like I have to like put it so high up on my shoulder just to even get, you know, be looking down the barrels. And I got to the point where I could connect every once in a while, but, it just never fit me properly. I would love to get that gun refurbished with the new stock that fits me, because I think it's a wonderful gun. I mean, the Sterlingworth, you know, I guess Fox's statement was their finest guns ever made, you know, and I'd say Sterlingworth is, you know, it's probably the best cheap gun ever made. You know, they weren't super expensive, but they, you know, they had the inner workings of the upper grade guns. This is just didn't have all the makeup, if you will, but the same inner workings. Yeah.
I think you quoted Macintosh by saying it was like the most value for $25 anybody could ever buy a shotgun or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe a bold claim, but you think spruce grouse are the most beautiful grouse?
They're awesome, man. They're so pretty. I don't know if you've ever seen a spruce grouse, but I have.
It's been a while. I appreciated that comment because they, especially, I mean, a male spruce grouse, such a cool looking bird. You know, similar in form factor, like shape and form factor to any grouse that you've seen, but just a really unique feathering pattern. And I remember them a lot more from when I was younger. Like where the areas that we used to hunt, where we'd go, there probably were more of them. You know, they're doing spruce grouse studies here in Minnesota to kind of keep track of the population. But I rarely see them now, and I don't go looking for them. But I would love to get one in my hands because it's been a long time since I have.
Yeah, they're beautiful. To me, they are the most beautiful of Idaho's grouse species, and I don't mean to take anything from any of the others, and it's probably a good thing because they are the quintessential fool hen. So their beauty makes up for their stupidity, I guess you could say, or naivety. But they're just a beautiful bird. Bright or red combs, you know, kind of a, they're just a darker, and I want to say they have a cream band on their tail. This is really pretty in Idaho. A lot smaller, I think, than your spruce grouse. They're a subspecies. They're the Franklin grouse here in Idaho.
Yeah, I don't know if my friend Bailey Peterson was on the show. She would know because I know she's hunted Franklin, and she's very well aware of the spruce grouse here in Minnesota. I'll have to ask her about that, but they are really, really cool. They're very like, and I guess I always associate this. I don't know if it's like they're where I find them. It's in kind of like a rockier area, and they're kind of like almost like if they're just standing statue still, like a grouse is apt to do, they would blend in with like a rock. You know, they're very just kind of muted. They don't have as much of the hens do. But the males kind of have almost more like solid color, like kind of ptarmigan like, if you would describe them that way. But then that cool band on the tail is really neat.
Yeah, I would compare them. I mean, to me, they kind of look like a miniature capercaillie.
Yeah, for sure. And that tracks just based on like that, what I know of the habitat where the cap, like kind of that boreal forest bird, basically.
Where we find them in Idaho is more kind of like swampy, boggy creek bottoms. Mm-hmm. So, up in the timber, and you just don't have them everywhere in Idaho. They're more of a central Idaho wilderness bird. And so, they have every right to be naive. They probably see less people than other grouse.
Well, man, we're right up against time here. I know I got to get Andy out the door. I didn't even get a chance to. I was going to have all the listeners close their eyes if they're not driving and have you seduce us and describe the Royal McNab, one of your favorite covers. But we'll have to let the readers go and read about that. I was really intrigued about maybe a new cover. I don't know if you've wrote about the Thunderdome before, but you were kind of describing that, like the uniqueness of how it's kind of like the same habitat, like, but this you follow these logging roads and it kind of weaves through similar looking areas. We'll have to leave it as a tease at this point, but I love your appreciation for the covers and the places, and you like to name them, which many bird hunters do. And it's all great stuff. I very much encourage the listeners to grab a copy of Idaho Grouse Fever. Where's the best place that they should go to find it, Andy? Where would you send folks?
It is available through order on Amazon. So, I mean, that's probably your easiest way to find it, is just to go to Amazon.com. If you go to my website, which is the www.uplandways.com, I am offering signed copies, so you can look at the article that I wrote on it and you know, figure out how you want to do that. You can find me on Facebook or on Instagram. Send me a message and I'll give you the details as well. So we are Perfect. Doing kind of a pre-sale. The release date is actually August 18th, so not next week, but the following week. So pretty yep. excited about that. Excited to there's been quite a few pre-orders from people, and I'm waiting for the Good. Books to come in, so we'll get those out as soon as we can.
All right, buddy. Well, I appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing what you do and keeping us all entertained in the off season. I'm eagerly anticipating the next time I get to sit down with a book. It's Friday, so I'm going to get some reading in this weekend. I can't wait. The season is almost here. I wish you the best. Everybody go check out the Breaking Cover podcast. Looking forward to the next episode of that. And Andy, as always, man, thanks, buddy, and hope you have a great fall.
It's a true pleasure. Thanks, Nick. I always enjoy visiting with you.
All right, that does it for this episode of the Bird Shop podcast. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Hey, everyone, it's your host, Nick, here with one more thing before you go. I want to thank you for joining us for this episode of the Bird Shop podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow the show so you don't miss our next episode. And if you really love the show and want to contribute above and beyond what you already do by listening, you can do so by joining our Patreon community. Click the link in the show notes of this episode to learn more. You can sign up for as little as $5 a month. And if you do, I'll send you some of these Bird Shop podcasts, can coolers and stickers as a thank you from me. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Bird Shop podcast.